Shrink Wrap Radio number 356, Relationships, Dating, and Disability with Dr. Danielle Shapuck.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Dr. Danielle Shapuck, and we'll be discussing issues surrounding dating and relationships for those with various sorts of disabilities. Danielle Shapuck earned her doctorate in 2009 in clinical psychology from the New School for Social Research in New York City. In 2012, she attracted an unusual degree of national media attention when she was awarded the title Ms. Wheelchair New York. Wheelchair dependent since kindergarten, Danielle balances her professional duties as a clinical psychologist at the South Beach Psychiatric Center in Brooklyn, New York, while handling increasing demands from the news media for access to her expertise. Danielle's particular areas of professional interest include the psychology of dating, relationships, and sexuality among the disabled. She has used media appearances to advocate for the greater mainstreaming of the disabled into the social fabric of everyday life. Recently, Danielle inaugurated a private practice based in the growing field of Skype-assisted therapy. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Danielle Shapuck, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Let's jump right into your story. First of all, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a small town called Scranton, Pennsylvania, a small rural town. People know it as home of the TV show The Office.
Okay.
It has some notoriety.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I haven't really dug into that series, The Office, although I know it's well reviewed. I spent 4 years at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, so I should know where Scranton is. Is it anywhere near Philadelphia?
You know, it's about 2.5 hours away.
Okay.
Pennsylvania is a big state.
Yeah, and I had no car, so I didn't explore it. And do you have any siblings?
So I have one younger sister, and she is an anesthesiologist in the U.S. Air Force.
Oh boy!
So we're both overachievers.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess, and we're very close.
Oh, that's good. Wonderful. Now you've been in a wheelchair ever since kindergarten, which is most of your life, and so it made me wonder if being in a chair for you somehow just feels normal.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It is normal. I know no other way.
Yes.
So it's something that's I completely accept, and it's integrated into my way of living. It's almost like my wheelchair. It's a part of my body, mm-hmm. and I pay necessary attention, but not too much negative attention.
Well, good for you. Now, other people aren't always so good at that. So I'm wondering what it was like for you at school in the early years.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of depends on, it's different having a congenital disability versus having some sort of injury, you know, resulting from being in a wheelchair. So, you know, it's, like I said, it's something that I've known. I got my first motorized wheelchair in kindergarten. So, so the early school years, I mean, I felt like I was a kid like everyone else.
Okay,
I didn't even think of myself as being different, and I've always done well academically and have had a lot of friends, and my parents and my sister always treated me, my parents always treated my sister and I as equals, which I find very important and really helpful in my own development. You know, they weren't overprotective. I went out with my friends, I went to summer camps, sleepovers. I feel like they didn't see me as different, and I didn't see myself as different And subsequently, my, you know, my social circle, my teachers didn't see me as different.
Yeah, that, how wonderful for you. And I suspect that you're a psychologist, so you can answer this both with your psychologist hat and or your other hat. I suspect your attitude of that you didn't see yourself different sort of led other people to experience you as you are and as not different.
Yes. Yes, and I think because I didn't see myself as different, I had a positive attitude.
Yeah. Now, did your parents ever give you any instruction or advice for dealing with being different from the other kids?
Their number one, their motto was like this, like, there are ways to negotiate and navigate my disability. So I can do everything that the other kids could do, but I have to just be a little creative and think of ways to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really like essentially a hopeful message. You know, I always felt that there were no limits. You know, I could do it. I just had to just think of a way to make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. So I gather then that you were not the target of teasing or discrimination as you were growing up.
No, you know, actually, no. I feel like it was just the opposite. That is, in some way, you know, people. I felt that people were kind of drawn to me in a positive way, in a way that was. They were eager to help. So, and it's interesting because even in living in New York City, I find the same thing. You know, New Yorkers have the reputation of being rude and dismissive, but I find it the opposite, that someone's always willing to open a door for me or, you know, hand me my Starbucks coffee from a high counter or even help me in the high-end department stores like Barney's shop and get clothes and, you know, not discriminated against at all. But I'm also a very social and extroverted person, which I think helps also with that.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. Well, that's wonderful. That should be inspiring to other people who are maybe in a similar situation or who have found themselves in a chair later in life and, you know, didn't sort of grow up with it. It at least points to the possibility that attitude can make a real difference.
Yes, especially people who are, you know, who are afraid to put themselves out there, you know, because it's true. If you just recently suffered an injury or having a disability is somehow a new way of life for you, you have that anxiety.
Sure.
You know, and sometimes fear of the worst happening, but quite the opposite could actually happen.
Well, your work right now, a lot of your work focuses on working with other people with disabilities of one sort or another, and with a focus on relationships and dating and so on. And so, of course, I have to wonder how that was for you in, you know, like high school and then later in college, which are, you know, supposed to be very social times and times of often sexual experimentation. So mm-hmm. how did you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Adolescence is a key time for starting to develop, obviously, interest in dating and romance and sex. And I mentioned already that I've always achieved academically and I've always had a big social circle. But the one area that I struggled in was this one, dating, mm-hmm. yes. romance, finding a significant other, and I felt excluded. I just felt like I wasn't a part of it. Like my friends, everyone around me was being asked to homecomings and proms and having their first kiss. And I was just kind of always wistfully wondering what that would be like, and even feeling hopeless that it may never happen for me. And what's interesting, Dave, is that in the literature, this is very common for adolescents with disabilities because, sure. Yeah, because they're often sheltered by family and friends who are reluctant to talk about them being sexual beings, you know, sexual people. And if your family and friends don't want to talk about it or discuss it with you or look at you in that way, then there's little opportunity to normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is that achieving academically is often stressed instead. So the implicit message as a disabled adolescent is, listen, you're probably not going to find romance or love or get married or have a family. So concentrate on developing yourself intellectually. So in essence, you may not be sexy or have sex appeal, but you have a good brain.
Yeah, boy.
You know, and if you really think about it, that's hard to hear. That's like me telling you, listen, you're never going to find anyone, Dr. Dave.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but no one's ever really going to accept your disability. You know, that's mm-hmm. just a really negative message. So,
It sure is. And somehow now you, to some degree, I don't know how much we can discuss that, have overcome that. I'm wondering if at any point you got some psychotherapy and if that played any role for you.
You know, I wish growing up through high school and college, I had no experience with psychotherapy and I never saw a therapist. And I struggled with this issue even through college. And in hindsight, I really wish I had a professional to talk mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
You know, someone that could really understand my situation and that was open to talking about it.
Yes.
And that could help me get in touch with myself as a sexual, attractive person who has a lot to offer someone else in a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
You know, but there was just, I mean, I didn't know of anything like that, and I don't think my parents did either.
Well, at what point did you decide you wanted to become a psychologist, a psychotherapist, not having had any experience in that domain?
Well, I wish I could give you a more exciting answer. But I just simply decided in high school when I took an intro to psychology course, and I was interested in it enough that I decided to major in it in college, and then I would go from there.
Okay.
See how I liked it.
Yeah.
But at that point in time, it really, my struggles with dating and romance had nothing to do with me deciding to become a psychologist, or even the psychology of me having a disability wasn't related. I just simply liked the field.
So at what point did you begin to put the two together? Because I have to assume that at some point there was some dawning recognition of, you know, this is kind of a psychological issue for me and I need to deal with it somehow. Did that begin to dawn on you in graduate mm-hmm. school someplace? Or?
Yes. Thank God it eventually dawned on me.
Yeah.
So I moved to Manhattan to go to graduate school. And it wasn't until then that I spread my wings, so to speak, and began to fly and began to date. And
now, how did you manage that transition?
You know, I came to Manhattan to go to graduate school, but I also was aware that New York is a very liberal, open-minded, highly populated city.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping that that would increase my chances mm-hmm. of meeting someone who would be romantically interested in me and vice versa. So I came, and when I came to New York and moved, you know, into my apartment, I signed up for Match.com, and okay. that was the online dating experience yes. was what kind of launched me into it. And I just started taking note of the similarities and differences between my experience, those of my friends, the trials and tribulations. And then it came together when I also started networking and meeting other people with disabilities and seeing that they had common issues and struggles. And then also my work clinically, where when I began to see, I observed struggles with dating and romance, and not just with physically disabled people, but also people struggling with mental, you know, psychiatric disabilities. Mm-hmm. So they all came together, and I realized that this was an area that's problematic and that no one's really reaching out to help and fix this situation. So
that raises an interesting question, because I would think maybe there would be other professionals who have kind of targeted this as an issue, or maybe a national association, or a national support group. Is there no such group that kind of focuses on sexuality, dating, relationships for people with various disabilities?
Yeah, I feel that it's kind of randomly, sporadically addressed.
I see.
And I've said this before too, in some of the other interviews I've done. It's just, you know, there's been campaigns to help us with many aspects of our lives as disabled people. You know, academically, in college, in the workplace, but there's really been no campaign designed to improve our romantic relationships and to increase our satisfaction in this area, to integrate us into this area. And it's an area where people really struggle. I mean, there's just so many, I mean, there's the first and foremost, the negative stereotypes and stigmas are just, I feel like they're entrenched. And it's just, it's easy to see. It's people assume that because you have a disability, you're in a wheelchair, whatever, you're not sexual. Or the big one is, oh, you can't have sex. Or you won't make a good wife, you won't make a good mother, husband, lover, you can't have children, you're not sexy, this is what comes to people's minds when you mention disability and dating.
Yes. Now, one thing that just popped into my mind is maybe helpful, is this movie, I've forgotten the title, with Helen Hunt, who is a sex therapist. What's the name of that film?
The Sessions.
The Sessions, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, what was your reaction to that film? I mean, I thought, you know, for me, it was like a real eye-opener, a really courageous film to address it as explicitly as it did.
Me too. I remember seeing it. I saw it at the Angelica in Manhattan. And I remember thinking, thank God. Thank God that someone's showing this on the big screen. It's like a relief. And to see it exposed.
Yes.
And I think they did a really good job. I think, especially the actor who played the disabled, the man with polio
right.
in the film. I think they did a great job on really illustrating the issue.
Yes, yeah, they sure did. I would think you'd have a copy as a therapeutic tool for the people you work with.
I know, and the issue is just, I mean, he really showed the anxiety, the apprehension, the hopelessness, mm-hmm. the depression, the self-consciousness. You know, because you take these stereotypes and stigmas that society has, and then you internalize them, and they become like a part of you and the way you view yourself, and mm-hmm. you don't view yourself as a sexual person.
Yeah. And by the way, it's hard enough for people who are not disabled. It's a yes. tremendously conflictual area, difficult, and, you know, so it just compounds it, you know, but it can be challenging for just about everybody. Now, last yeah. year, you were awarded the title of Ms. Wheelchair New York.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. How did that come about?
I know. You don't really think of that when you think of PhD, right?
Right. You don't.
So my friend discovered the pageant online. And it's a pageant that recognizes achievement and accomplishment in disabled women, women in wheelchairs.
Yeah,
And unfortunately, it's not more well known. But so she uncovered it somehow online and nominated me, and the pageant director called me, and I applied, and I won the title. And I wanted to pursue the title and win it. I was actually very strategic about it, because I knew that having this title would help open doors for me and mm-hmm. allow me to begin to promote my views on dating and sex and relationships. Because at this point I was already passionate about it, and I'd already written a couple articles about it. So I felt like this unique combination, like having a PhD, having this title, would really make me palatable to pop culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the masses who like pop culture, and just make more people listen and facilitate, just make it easier for me to change this negative societal view. Because it's not just, wow, here's a woman who has her doctorate. But, oh, wow, she's a pageant winner? Oh, what does she have to say about this?
Yeah.
And I feel like it really has had a good response.
You know, I'm thinking of, as I hear you talk, I'm thinking of Marley Matson. Is that her name? The deaf actress. And, you know, that film has been a real pulpit for her in terms of showing how capable deaf people are. And I assume you've seen her in something or other.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I don't recognize the name, but I'm sure if I've seen, I'm sure if you showed me her picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good point. I mean, people don't expect you to be a professional. People don't expect you to be a highly educated professional who's in a romantic relationship or who's active romantically. You know, I use the term romance loosely, you know, dating and sexual.
Mm-hmm.
People don't expect any of that.
So I don't know how much of your personal experience you'd feel comfortable sharing, but I am wondering, you know, well, what's happened for you? How have you been able to move along in that dimension in your own personal life?
Yeah, you mean in terms of dating and romance?
Yeah, dating, romance, and sexuality, if you're comfortable talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always putting myself out there and always trying to find someone who likes me and I like them. And I think that's important. It's not just someone who likes me and can look past my wheelchair. It's also me liking them. And I use that point with my clients a lot. This is a two-way street. You know, it's not just, let me take this person. They like me. They accept my wheelchair. No one else will. No. It's, do you like them too? And that's very empowering, and that's very important. So I, I'm single. I label myself as single, single in dating. And I keep, I'm out there online, or now there's the new social apps for the iPhone.
Yep.
That, yeah, that really facilitate meeting people or people social, you know, just friends or romance. And I think it's important that I keep doing, I call it field research. But I, you know, I need to be out there and know what it's like and be rejected and be able to take that experience and translate it to my practice and my work. So, yeah.
Are you talking about Twitter and Facebook or other sort of more specialized apps?
Yeah, that's interesting you brought that up too. Yeah, Twitter and Facebook, and now I feel like there's kind of been an explosion of new apps for the iPhone. One that was recently brought to my attention was this app called Tinder. And it's really like online dating on speed, maybe on cocaine.
How do you spell that? I didn't quite catch the name.
It's T as in Tom, okay. I-N-D-E-R.
Okay, I guess I did catch it. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
So what, dating on speed, how so?
It's an app on your iPhone, and it just... It's a very basic profile. You really just see pictures of people who are located in your area. Pictures and the ages of people in your area. And you just either like or not like them, on the screen. And if I like someone and they also like me back, then it's a match and you're immediately chatting with them in real time. On the phone. So, you know, I'm trying it out, and it's very interesting because, you know, you're exposed to a high volume of people. And I think as a disability, trying to date in our society, which still has a lot of these negative stereotypes, I guess you could say, it's kind of important to expose yourself to a lot of people, you know, just get to know a lot of different people, and that would, it kind of increases your chances of finding someone who's interested. And, you know, I get the same rejection that other people get. I mean, I recently got, oh, you're so interesting and beautiful and smart, but honestly, I have to be honest, I've never dated someone in a wheelchair. I don't know what that's like. And that's, you know, that's very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like you have to be sort of like a salesman. I mean, part of the salesman experience is you have to be willing to experience lots and lots of no's before you can, you know, get to some yeses.
Mm-hmm. And you have to have a thick skin about it.
Yeah.
And I encourage people with disabilities all the time to keep out there and keep dating. Because it's also very, I mean, some people give up on dating altogether, people with disabilities. They'll just give up on dating, think it's not possible for them, it's not going to happen. But the more we are all out there dating, the more normal this becomes.
Yes.
You know, then when someone's interested in you, it's not, their friends aren't saying, hey, buddy, what are you doing? You know, why don't you just date someone that doesn't have all the problems that she has in a wheelchair? Now it becomes, oh, yeah, I dated a girl in a wheelchair before. Yeah, she was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all part of the grand scheme.
Yeah, right. Going back to Ms. Wheelchair New York, I gather you've been the focus of quite a bit of media attention. Of course, I'm media, I guess. I'm talking to you right now. How's that been? What kinds of doors has it opened for you?
Well, it's going really well. It's you know, fueled my fire, my passion even more, because I realize how much people want to talk about this topic. especially people with disabilities. And like you said before, the fact of the matter is that dating is difficult for everyone.
Right.
You know, it's a universal struggle. But when you add a wheelchair to the picture, it just makes it 10 times harder. So it makes it just a very relatable topic to not just people in wheelchairs, but people who are able-bodied as well.
Yes.
They can understand, and they're open and willing to listen to what I have to say. And I think it's important. You know, I've been getting media attention from not just media specifically for people with disabilities, but also general media, you know, like the New York Daily News, Yahoo. And that's very important that both audiences are listening. Because if any positive changes are going to happen, it can't just be people with disabilities listening to what I have to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all know that it's a problem, but
right.
Everyone needs to listen and change their outlook.
Yes, yes. Now, I have the impression that you've also become an advocate for the disabled in New York City. Is that so? And if so, what can you tell us about that work?
Yeah, I've done some advocacy work since I've been here. The main areas that I've been involved in, I've been involved in my local community board, which is just the board that represents my neighborhood in Manhattan. And I often will help, will represent disabled rights and accessibility, bringing to their attention accessibility issues.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there was a really dangerous curb in near my apartment building that didn't have a curb cut, you know, a ramp that lets you
yes.
up onto the curb. Yeah. So anybody in a wheelchair would have to go on the street for a little ways until they could come up onto the sidewalk where there was a parking garage, you know, because the parking garage had the ramp.
Yeah.
So that was very dangerous. That was one of my campaigns, was to present this to the Port Authority and the local community board. And I thought it would be a no-brainer. You know, I thought they would see my pictures and say, you know, wow, we didn't know it was so dangerous. But it was really a struggle. I had to get petitions. But I eventually got an ADA-compliant curb cut put there. So that was a nice success.
Yeah, well, good for you.
Yeah.
Each success builds to the next one and more of them. And,
yes.
Now, in addition to your work at the South Beach Psychiatric Center, where you're working in Brooklyn, you
yes.
also have a private practice to deal with the sorts of issues that we've been talking about here. And I see that you're offering consultation services on Skype, too.
Yes.
Well, yeah. How's the Skype consulting working out for you?
Well, I'm very excited about it because I engineered this. So it's my private practice, and I do it all via Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And I engineered it specifically to make it easier for people with physical disabilities to attend therapy.
Yes,
because
how's that?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, we all frequently deal with environmental barriers, you know, just difficult to leave the house, or we have home attendance, or, you know, inclement weather. There's just a whole host of factors. So I felt, you know, this would be great because you don't even have to leave your house. And I find it wonderfully rewarding. And I find the therapeutic relationship richer than I ever expected.
Really?
That's yeah,
interesting.
Because it's like, it's as someone with a disability, I understand the intricacies of having a disability. You know, I've walked in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find that this, coupled with my doctorate, makes it really great therapy.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if there's almost a kind of anonymity, even though I assume you're doing this on video, on Skype?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you can see one another, so it's not totally anonymous. But there is a bit of a remove, and I'm just wondering if that remove actually might make it easier for someone to share.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure about that really, and I'm not aware of any research about that yet, but maybe. I mean, you cut out the whole piece of, you know, getting out of the house, going to a therapist's office, being in a therapist's office, you know, that can cause apprehension.
Sure. Fear that somebody who knows you might see you there or something like that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, and it's just really convenient. You know, you can cut out the whole travel time and so...
Well, is everybody that you're seeing that way, are they all in wheelchairs, or are there other sorts of disabilities that are finding you as well?
I have a mix of clients. So I have people who aren't physically disabled at all. And actually my work, my day job at the outpatient clinic, I see people with just mental health issues. Few have disabilities, but most, they all have mental health issues. So I see a wide array of disorders and struggles and different levels of severity. And it's kind of the same in my practice, although I have more people with physical disabilities.
And how about the people who come to the clinic where you physically work? Do they seem to accept the fact that they're working with somebody in a chair? Does that seem to, do they express surprise? Do, you know, what kind of reception are you getting?
I find that people who come to the clinic are in desperate need of help. You know, they're at a point in their lives where they want to make a change and they don't know how to do it, and they're reaching out for help. So they respect me as a professional and as a clinician. And perhaps, you know, I'm from a psychodynamic orientation. So, so you know, the therapy is about them and how they kind of project their own attitudes and beliefs onto me. I don't reveal much about my own self. But I feel like, you know, having a disability, it's the same. I mean, maybe we can't assume that that's, I mean, they might have an issue with me because I'm a female or because I'm Caucasian or because I'm 35 mm-hmm. or because, you know, it's the same.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same kind of dynamic that any other therapist would experience.
Right.
I feel.
Yeah, and you anticipated what was going to be my next question, which was to ask what kind of a therapeutic approach you use and psychodynamic. That's wonderful. I applaud that.
Well, I trained at the New School for social research. So,
are they known for that?
Yes. That's random.
Yeah, I went to the University of Michigan, and I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't been in touch to see if their orientation is the same as it was when I was there, but the mm-hmm. clinical psychology track was very psychodynamic when I was going through school there. So, mm-hmm. so it was, and the New School, I guess, was another was one of the places where years ago when psychoanalysts were fleeing Germany and other places that were being threatened. I think the New School was probably one of the places where some of those very influential analysts landed and helped to establish the psychoanalytic approach in this country.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. It has a really rich, rich history.
Yes, that was just kind of being channeled to me as we're talking here. I must have heard that somewhere.
It's a great learning environment. I'm really glad I went there for my doctorate.
Now, I understand that among your many projects, you're working to produce a pilot for a reality-based TV series?
Yes.
Wow, what's that about? Tell us.
I know, I really have nothing on my plate.
Yeah,
I'm bored.
Right.
So it's part of my, you know, it's a two-part, I guess let's call it a campaign or mission. You know, the first part, I'm working with people with disabilities to help them feel integrated into the world of dating and romance and, you know, to improve their, I call it dateable self-esteem, because I feel like through my work, it's two different concepts, self-esteem versus dateable self-esteem. You know, I always say that the reason I'm single is not because I have low self-esteem. You know, I'm happy with my career. I have great mm-hmm. friends. I have an apartment in Manhattan. But how I feel about myself as a dateable sexual person is different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part one. And the other part is just to normalize dating someone with a disability for the rest of the population and dispelling all these negative stereotypes. And I feel that one of the best ways to do this is just to expose society on a huge level, and using the medium of television.
Yeah.
Just to really show people. So, you know, I could go around locally and go to local hospitals and nursing homes and high schools, but I'm not going to change the way people in Nebraska see this. So I want to do something through television. And so the concept is through reality TV, just show people how you could be a professional and dating and socializing in a wheelchair. You just happen to be in a wheelchair. And I feel, if you think about it, it's super important, because if you compare it to other populations, so to speak, it's like not that long ago, it wasn't acceptable to be gay. It wasn't cool mm-hmm. to be gay. It wasn't mm-hmm. cool to be in a bisexual relationship. And now it's acceptable and cool. And so let's do that. Let's make this happen for people with disabilities.
Yeah, and that sounds like a great strategy for doing it. And I'll keep my eye out for that show. And good luck with that. Do you have any other irons in the fire?
I have a lot. I always have irons in the fire. my fire is like burning high right now.
Yeah.
One of the main things I'm going to be doing is I'm launching a podcast.
Uh-huh.
Where I...
Oh, no, competition.
Don't worry. It's going to be... I want to be able to offer dating advice
uh-huh.
to people with physical disabilities as like a call-in show. So
that's a great idea.
Thank you. If you can't afford going into therapy or maybe you're not ready to be in therapy and you want to kind of anonymously ask a question, this is the venue that I'm going to offer people. Kind of like a Dr. Ruth, but sexier.
Sexier. Okay.
So I am launching this the first week of June.
This is really happening. That's just 2 weeks away.
Yes, and I just would encourage people to check my website for the official launch details.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give us the website right now? I'll definitely be mentioning it in my commentary, but let's put it out there right now.
Yes, so my website is simply my name. So it's DanielleShapuck.com. And I could spell that. It's DanielleSheepuk.com.
Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned part of the two-pronged plan is to change the attitudes of able-bodied people toward their disabled peers. Have you seen any changes over time in those attitudes? I mean, do you have any sense that things have gotten better or are in the process of getting better, or is it too early to draw any conclusions?
You know, I think we're at the forefront of seeing some major change in this area. Mm-hmm. That being dating, romance, and sexuality. And I feel like it's really at the very beginning, and we've seen some major breakouts. For example, discussions like we talked about, and there's a reality TV show on Sundance called The Push Girls. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, I haven't seen that.
Yes, so it's about four women who have spinal cord injuries. And they're in their, I think, roughly 20s and 30s. They're four friends in L.A. And it just shows just the everyday life of someone in a wheelchair. And it's very important because, again, wheelchair people think, dirty sweatpants, bad haircut. People don't expect you to have a good haircut, wear stylish clothes, wear high heels, and so this show is helping to just normalize the everyday routine. And I think that's opening a window.
Yes, definitely. Somebody there is definitely on the same wavelength
yes.
that you're on.
And I just did an interview for Women's E! News. One of their journalists is doing a piece on the new social apps that I spoke about before, mm-hmm. like Tinder. And there's an adolescent piece to these apps. They're very highly monitored and censored. And there's talk. I discussed how this can help people with disabilities, adolescents specifically, networking and meeting people and feeling integrated and flirting and things like that. So this is also very new. And I mean, I really wish I had that when I was an adolescent.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, that's another iron in my fire. I'm going to be, Women's E! News is going to be bringing a piece of their magazine will be an adolescent segment. So in the fall, I'll be doing some writing for adolescents with physical disabilities.
Which, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And maybe that there'll be a way for them to respond back to you and get some dialogue going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, as we begin to wind down here, some people don't like the term disabled and prefer to talk about differently abled. And I'm wondering if you have a position on that.
I don't have a strong position either way. Okay. I feel like I'm just not that caught up in the terminology, although I do understand what the proponents of mm-hmm. differently abled are saying.
Sure.
But I'm not really offended either way.
Okay, well, I know you've got an appointment coming up. Is there any final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, of course, it's going to be a positive one.
Good.
I tell my clients all the time, I tell everyone that I don't care what your disability is or how severe it is, dating and romance and having a satisfying sexual life is possible for you. It just is. Period. End of story.
Okay. Wonderful.
And I encourage people to with disabilities to keep dating and keep putting themselves out there, and eventually society will, wise up and change this negative attitude.
Okay. Well, Dr. Danielle Shapuk, thanks for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
it's been my pleasure, and thanks for helping me get this message, you know, get this out there.
Something that happens occasionally in these interviews is that after I turn off the recorder, the guest will make some comments that would have been perfect in the interview. It's as if once the interview is over, they let down their guard or let down their hair even more, and it becomes just a conversation between the two of us. And sometimes that's when they say something that's pure gold. There have been times when I just let the recorder run even after the formal part of the interview is over, and I've been able to splice in some of that pure gold back into the interview. However, that does create more work for me, trying to figure out how to splice it back in seamlessly. So that's why I stopped leaving the recorder on. But I may have to rethink that, because it happened once again in this interview with Danielle, or should I say, after this interview with Danielle. After the recorder was off, she began to talk about how much shame there tends to be around issues of relationship, dating, and sex for people suffering from disabilities such as being wheelchair-bound. She has seen this extensively in her therapy work with the disabled clients. As she said, they might be in their mid-30s or even later, and with great shame and embarrassment eventually confess that they're still a virgin. I thought this was really an important dynamic for the psychotherapeutic process, really getting down to the nitty-gritty, and I would have liked to have had it come up in the interview proper. However, I'm sharing it with you now, with Danielle's permission, by the way, and my rendition will just have to suffice.
You've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for a while now. You've been entertained, thought-provoked, inspired. And you've donated how many times? Thought so. Wouldn't you like to make a change? To give just a little for all you receive? It's easy. Just hit the big green button on the website to keep Dr. Dave on the airwaves. Shrink Wrap Radio, proudly brought to you by you.
Thank you, Claire and Andrew from Down Under. We are in the midst of big family celebrations here in the Van Nuys Casa. Yesterday, my son Jonathan graduated from the University of California Medical Center with a master's degree in nursing, which means he now will be a family nurse practitioner. Not only was he awarded the Master of Science degree from the most prestigious nursing program in the country, but he also was the student speaker for his graduating class and also the recipient of a special award. You can imagine how proud we all are. His brother, Matthew, who lives in Manhattan, flew out with his girlfriend, and Matthew's twin brother, Christopher, and my daughter and my wife all attended the ceremony along with tons of Jonathan's friends and supporters. We all went out for a wonderful lunch in San Francisco after the ceremony. And today, everyone will soon be arriving here at our home for a big family brunch, complete not only with our adult kids, but also grandchildren. So I'm squeezing in these comments before all that happens. Again, I apologize for not getting out a Shrink Wrap Radio newsletter this month, but as you can see, a lot has been going on recently, and one can only do so much. I do want to remind you that the Third World Congress of Positive Psychology will be taking place in Los Angeles, June 27 through June 30. You'll find a banner ad for that in the right-hand sidebar on shrinkwrapradio.com. And if you click on that banner ad, it will take you to the World Congress registration site. People will be coming from all over the world to be at that conference, and it's one that you might want to consider attending yourself. While you're on that right-hand sidebar, you'll see banner ads for many of the books written by past guests, and I encourage you to click on those, which will take you to the relevant Amazon.com page, where you can read the reviews and maybe even purchase the book. Finally, I'm happy to report that we have a new transcript on the site, thanks to Renata Selecki. She has transcribed number 333. She has transcribed number 333, Developments in Energy Therapy with Dr. David Feinstein. Thank you so much, Renata. And if you would like to volunteer to transcribe one of your favorite episodes, and if it hasn't already been transcribed, then please drop me a line and I'll put you down for it and send you some instructions to make the job easier. And I thank you in advance.
Hi, this is Phyllis Katz-Sheriff, speaking for myself and Peter Sheriff. We're clinical psychologists, authors, and marriage therapists.
And you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
That's right. By now, you know the drill. Marriage therapists Phyllis and Peter Sheriff will be my guests on the next episode. So let's dip into the old email bag. And first, we hear from Loida, who writes, Dear Dr. Dave, love the show. Quick recommendation for your series of shows on nutrition and mental health. Emily Deans, MD. She's a psychiatrist steeped in evolutionary psychology and really at the cutting edge slash intersection of the ancestral health movement, evolutionary biology, and 21st century mental health. She also writes for Psychology Today. Check her out. And thanks for what you do. And she gives a link to evolutionarypsychiatry.blogspot.com so you all can check that out on your own. And that's cheers from Loida, or is it Loida? I'm not sure. She's an MFT in nearby Daly City. So thank you for that. And next we hear from John, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. I think I found your show from surfing podcasts, and from time to time I surf podcasts to see if there are any additional ones that I like. I'm an avid listener of podcast radio, This American Life, The Moth, Planet Money, occasionally Radio Lab, and I've been looking for a while for one that covers psychology and have had yet to find one that really piques my interest until yours. Yay. Thanks very much for doing the program. I've been going through a lot of transition lately, and your podcast has actually been immensely helpful. Regards, and that's from John, who is an MD, an MPH, and a PLLC. Now, MPH would be Masters of Public Health. PLLC is a new one on me. I'm not sure what that is. But John, I'm so glad to hear that you've discovered our podcast. And a lot of your favorite podcasts are mine as well. You mentioned the This American Life and The Moth and Radio Lab, and those are all three that I have enjoyed. And so I'm always happy when fellow professionals find Shrink Wrap Radio and let me know that they like it and that it's nourishing them too. So thanks a lot, and I hope you'll stick with us. And next, I received a quick note from recent guest John Robinson, you remember, who spoke about what made aging men want and talked about the Odyssey. And he wrote to quickly let us know that he's going to be doing a webinar on the magic of aging. And it starts on July 2nd. And if you'd like to be involved in that, if you'd like to listen in, you can find out about it by going to www.csourcewisdom.com. That's csourcewisdom.com. And thanks for letting us know about that, John Robinson. And finally, we hear from Louise, who replied to my thanks for her thoughtful donation. And Louise writes, You're more than welcome, a mere drop of gratitude in the ocean of pleasure, knowledge, and wisdom that you have given me throughout the years with Shrink Wrap. I will do my best to come up with a sound bite. I had asked if she would send us a little sound clip saying why she has donated over the years. And she says, I will do my best to come up with a sound bite. I run after a six-year-old daily, so I will need to catch my breath and cobble some words together before committing myself to tape or digital data, she says. Cheers, and that's from Louise. And so, Louise, I really do appreciate your periodic contributions. Keeps me going. So let's wrap it up with that for today. You can send your emails, as always, to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And in addition, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I am ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-350-9918. Thanks to Dr. Danielle Shapuk for giving us a wheelchair view of dating and relationships, not only from the perspective of a wheelchair, but also from that of a courageous and innovative psychologist. As I mentioned earlier, my next show will feature husband and wife psychologists and marriage therapists Phyllis Koch-Sherris and Peter Sherris. We'll be discussing their book, Lifelong Love, 4 Steps to Creating and Maintaining an Extraordinary Relationship. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long. Just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet, and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, babe, it's all in your mind. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.